Hearst Ranch is a proud sponsor of the Heritage Radio Network. Learn more about Hearst Ranch at HearstRanch.com.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. We're a member-supported food radio network broadcasting over 35 weekly shows live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. Join our hosts as they lead you through the world of craft brewing, behind the scenes of the restaurant industry, inside the battle over school food, and beyond. Find us at HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
So you don't shun the devil with your rock and roll load. Knows that country music's gonna save your soul. The devil runs his groove in them rhythm and blues. That's him. It's gonna get you some in the end.
Welcome back to The Speakeasy. I'm Damon Bolte.
And I'm Souther Teague.
Hi, Souther.
Hey, buddy. I'm great. I feel like it's been forever since I've been here.
Have you even been here this year?
Nope. Happy New Year.
Oh, yeah. Happy New Year.
Yeah. We had a three-week break because the station was closed for the holidays, right. And Dave was traveling the world and not paying attention to his job.
Correct.
Sorry. I'm glad you had a good time, though.
Thank you.
Yeah. And then last week I couldn't be here because...
Some stuff.
Just some shit, man.
Yeah.
It really sucked. Came up fast.
Yeah.
Yeah. I guess I could talk about it.
Like, we should.
We should actually. Unplanned, unrehearsed. We had a problem in my company where some sexual harassment went down, and we had to make swift action. And so we had to have an all staff meeting among 70 plus employees to bring a swift halt to that sort of activity, and ended up frankly having to let go of a senior member of the team. And
yeah, man.
I just had to be done, man. I couldn't make the show because I had to do the hard work that is life, you know? I think we talk all the time about all the fun and lucky stuff that we get to do. This was the unfun and unlucky side of it.
Yeah. I mean, we got to talk about it. That's the whole point right now.
I think so.
It's a lot of stuff's coming up.
That's the climate that's out there. And you know, I think it's a good thing that we're moving in the right direction.
Yeah.
And I'm not one to tolerate that sort of behavior. And so I didn't.
Yeah.
And there you have it.
Well, good. Good.
I hope you had a great show last week with John. I wanted to be here. You know, I have one of his pieces on my wall.
Yeah, me too. I've got a couple of them. He dropped off the illustration of my bar, Grand Army, for us.
Oh, that's right. Yes. I can't wait to see it framed. Big.
Yeah, I'm gonna. It'll be on the wall.
Yeah, table four.
Yeah, table four.
I listened to the show.
Yeah,
I can't be here, but I listened.
Yeah, it was a great time with John Tebow last week. Speaking of great times. The guest that we have on the show today is someone I've known for a very long time. And, actually, we were just talking about it before the show. I can't really remember where or how I met this person, but those are my favorite kinds of people. It's like, just all of a sudden, you've got, like, a person in your life, and you don't really need to know, like, the story of how you met and the first time or whatever. But I do know that when my band, the theme song for the Speakeasy is actually a song by my band called Brothers. And when we were releasing our first album about five years ago, we got to play at the legendary CBGB.
Oh, yeah.
Although it's a John Varvatos shop now. They clear it out for... They were doing it about once a month back then for different bands. And we got to play CBGBs for our album release. And I had a couple of buddies there. Liquor.com was a sponsor with it. And... couple of our buddies, Tom Venegas and the person we have on the show today, Willie Shine, made up a whole cocktail menu based on our album.
Amazing.
Yeah. So that's really cool. And that's so special place in my heart with this guy. Welcome to the show, Willie Shine.
Thank you very much, guys. Happy to be here.
I can't believe you've not been on the show before.
I know. It's crazy, man. It's crazy. I know that you brought it up a few times and it just never came to fruition.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, at the end of the day, proud to be here now.
I'm super happy to have you, man. You're like you're a dynamo. Like you have a certain amount of a certain style of energy that is infectious. Like you, every time I see you in a room, I'm like, all right, this is gonna be a good time. Yeah. Like I'm not kidding. Like roll into an event or a room or whatever, and you are already there, or when you come into the room, things change. Like you set a tone. You have like traveling music. Like you got like a theme song when you're in your head or whatever. I don't know what it is. A lot of energy though. Good to see you.
Right on, man. Thank you very much.
Yeah. So why don't you tell us about Willie Shine, man? You right now you are you work for Jägermeister.
Yep.
One of my faves.
Yeah, it's a good one.
Everybody knows.
Everybody knows that. Everybody knows. Yeah, but let's take us back. How did you get to where you are now in this this industry?
Well, I mean, we could go as far back. Because
you've done a lot. You've had a cocktail consulting company from back in the day. You've done...
Let's establish first. You're an old dude.
I'm an old dude. 45 this year. Looking forward to it, though, you know? I've worn a lot of hats in this game, man. I've been around for a long time. But I tell you what, I've been blessed. The opportunities that that this industry has given me is, like we were speaking of before, is pretty incredible. And, you know, I guess going back as far as when I first started bartending in 1993 to kind of pay my way through college. I was going to architecture school. I played two sports. I was basketball, baseball, Division III school in Boston, Massachusetts, my hometown. And I was paying my way through school. I started off as a barback, and then ultimately had an opportunity that, a lot of stories go. You know, bartender didn't make it in. I put my hand up and said, I'm ready to go. Let's go. Put me in, coach. I'm ready to play. And back in those days, of course, we were making just like screwdrivers and sex on the beaches and things like that. And, you know, I always was asking questions to my mentors of that time. Like, I had an opportunity really young to work in a place that was full of incredible individuals that just, you know, it was called Zanzibar in Boston. It was a nightclub that was at the tail end of when people went out dancing for dates. You know, it was pre-EDM and all that kind of stuff. It was like, let's go out on a date and dress up and go dancing. That's and the cool. local DJ from the radio station was your DJ at the nightclub. Like, you know, I'm stoked on the fact that I was able to be a part of that era a little bit, you know? So early years, all of the bartenders that I work with, most of them were just, they were great mentors, you know? And there was one guy that worked, point at a bar, the front bar, and his name was Augie. And Augie was a private detective during the day, and he was a bartender at night. And he was probably 35 at the time, and I was old like 18, dude. You know? And he was a rad dude. And I always asked him, like, Augie, what do I do? How can I be like you, man? I love what you do. I love this industry. I've fallen in love with it. What are some of the things that, you know, that I could do? And what I keep really still to this day in everything that I do, the biggest thing he said is, don't be a one-trick pony. Learn all styles of bartending. And back then, what was it? It was like sports bars. It was steakhouse. It was restaurant. And, like, you know, Flair wasn't even that big back then. I mean, it was just, there wasn't that. It was, but learn, so Willie, you could get behind any bar and hold court. And I just kept that with me through the years, you know, and that's something that I, you know, held close to my heart. And what I still would teach young up-and-comers today is, like, don't be just a cocktail bartender. Don't just be a volume bartender. Like, learn all styles so that if you really love this industry, be able to, you know, jump behind any stick and hold court kind of thing, you know. And back then it was all about experience and hospitality. Boston's a small town. It was very segregated too. So you had to, you know, personally promote without an ego, right? So back before we had, cell phones and internet and all that kind of stuff, I was taught to get business cards, keep a Rolodex, tell people you're on the bar, get people to come in. I would buy champagne off the house and like pour glasses of champagne as people came in just to make them feel at home.
Classy,
you know, little things, the little tiny things early on, you know? And, so that was the early years. And then, you know, that was all, you know, volume, and as we know, and you guys are OGs, man. So, you know, when you really find, you know, your niche in volume and you're like in that zone and you're, you know, running that bar with all the people in front of you and, you know, you're putting money in the register and you're ringing high and everybody's having a blast and you're holding court and your whole thing, it's one of the best feelings in the world. So I still to this day, you know, cherish the years of volume bartending. It was great. And then I fell in love with the fine dining side. I got a job on Newbury Street in Boston at a place called Armani Cafe. It was pretty funny. And during the day, I was a buddy of mine was the general manager of, actually, he was the owner of the Harley Davidson store on Newbury Street in Boston. Really? And so I would work there during the day selling Harley clothes to like international, like Euro cats that love the American made, you know, kind of thing. It was pretty funny. And then I would work at this fine dining establishment. I really, that's when I got the bug as far as food, as far as flavor, as far as how to match it together, understanding back of the house, front of the house, how it all comes together. And I luckily had a chef that, and we would work together, a chef at this place, and we would work together, and I would juice leftover juice. I would use fruit that was left over, and I would start making my own drinks. This is like 1998, 97.
Right.
And I would start coming up with things, you know? Didn't know, I mean, you look at a Boston bartender guide back there or back then or one of those other bartending books, and even if you saw the recipes, it just didn't stick.
Right.
I didn't understand 2 ounce, 1 ounce, 3 ounce. I just started to work with flavors mixing. Sure. And I fell in love with that style of bartending too because of the amount of other things you could offer, like ports and sherries and wine and beer and all of that. And it ultimately took me to Nantucket Island, off the coast of Massachusetts, near Martha's Vineyard, you know, and fell in love with that island right away. Ended up having a great job. So as I showed up, I thought I was the cat's meow, right? I was giving out my resume. It was the end of the summer. It was in the fall. People were like, "We're not hiring now. What are you doing?" So I was like, "Screw it. I'll stay here for the winter. I'll dig in, and by summer, I'll try to get, you know,
I'll be top of the list at that time.
Yeah, right? Hopefully, you know. And through the summer, I ended up taking a server job, which I'd never been a server before. So I had to kind of throttle back a little bit and take that ego down a little bit and really just kind of dig in and get to know the environment and the people and local community. And I painted and I worked at the gym and I pumped gas and I did whatever it took to get through the winter. And then by the time summer came around, I got an opportunity to work at these two places called The Boarding House and The Pearl, two really, really, really incredible, incredible restaurants in Nantucket Island. They're still there today.
Cool.
Really epic, epic joints. And learned so much from those guys about hospitality, dealing with people. You know, you had celebrities, you had, you know, the millionaires, and then you had the construction workers in the bartenders and restaurants and fishermen and everybody that were just rubbing elbows together. And it was a beautiful little community I fell in love with. And then in the summer times, I would go to Aspen. So Nantucket, Aspen, back and forth. That was the glory days, you know, really enjoyed doing that.
What a life.
And then had an opportunity to move to New York and open up a restaurant in 2002-03. It was called the Biltmore Room. It was on 8th Avenue and 25th Street. Bill Grimes gave us his last 3-star review. Ended up meeting, you know, my mentors still to this day, the Steve Olsons, Paul Packel, Dave Wandrich, all those cats, early on, and had great opportunities. Like we were talking about before, just, you know, right place, right time, a lot of luck, a lot of passion into this career path. And I met a lot of people that were interested in similar things. You know, when I moved to New York, it was like, oh my God, people are doing this kind of thing. Oh my God, I can't believe it. Yeah. Like, it just opened my eyes. I was like, I have an opportunity here to do something I really, really enjoy. And it was rad.
Up to this point, do you think you were still in a position where you thought, I'm just doing this because I'm enjoying it and it's fun? Or were you at the place at that point where you're like, this isn't going to be my career? Like, this is what I'm doing.
I was, when I got to New York.
To open the restaurant.
And to open the restaurant and started seeing, like, Julie Reiner opening Flatiron Lounge, Sasha Petrosky with Milk and Honey, the amount of newspapers and magazines and stuff that were talking about cocktails and bartenders and, you know, back of house coming to front of house and chefs working about, like, that was the beginning of it, you know, and I just happened to step into the right situation, right place, right time where it was popping. And that is when I realized that this is an opportunity of a lifetime to really dig in. And
that's a decade, by the way, because you said 93 is when you started bartending, and then you said 2003. So it took 10 years for you to kind of like have a fragmented training session. It sounds like you got something from each place.
Yep.
That became the whole of like training.
I mean, up until that point, you know, there was moments I was in love with bartending.
Yeah.
And I still am. I still have the bartender mentality brain still to this day. The competitive nature, the working within a family and a group and a team and the you know, dealing with, you know, the, not dealing with, but working with your guests and people and experience and hospitality, and all that, that whole world to me is like, I got a full body goosebump with you guys in this room talking about it right now, man. You know what I mean?
And this
that is the world.
And this is the stuff you can't, like, teach people, you know?
Yeah.
Willie's just got it.
He's just got it, man.
I know.
So,
like,
so this is, you got us up to 2003-ish, 2004-ish, and then you had met Paul, Steve, Dale, and then you were in the inaugural Bar 5 Day, right? Which was 2006.
2006, yeah. So previous to that, I opened up a after the restaurant. I went back to Nantucket for a little bit, and then I came back to New York and opened up Bed. I don't know if you guys remember Bed Nightclub,
the place with all the beds,
with all the beds and the roof. I mean, we kicked off rooftop partying environment bars here in the city. There was nothing like it up until that point. And, you know, star-studded staff of John Lemaire, Aisha Sharp, Edwin Medina, Remy Chaubertin, Tim Cooper. I mean, we had an incredible, incredible bartending staff that was, it was epic to work with. I mean, we were doing some crazy things there. Each register would ring like 15 grand on a night. It was bananas.
That's crazy, man.
It was bananas. Bananas, bananas, bananas. And we were, you know, and Dale DeGroff was our, the consultant at the beginning that helped us do the menu. So a lot of education pregame. That's where Leo DeGroff got his cut his teeth for his first bartending job was with us.
Nice.
Yep. Cool. He's like, here's a funny story, and I hope Leo hears this.
Oh, he will.
Is
I'll make sure.
So we're you know, if, like whenever you open up a restaurant, you know you're doing your bar training, you're doing your cocktail training, that kind of thing. And we were at a situation. We're at the moment where everybody was introducing themselves and talking about who they are and what they do and that kind of thing. And Leo was there to help Dale, help his dad, kind of put on this week-long training. Because Leo would always travel with Dale and help him with his events and that kind of thing. And I think he was like 18 or 19 at the time, or maybe, yeah, somewhere around there. And we get to him, and Leo goes, I'm a shark fisherman.
My name's Leo, I'm a shark fisherman.
You know, but if you look at Leo's Instagram pages and his social media, it's all about fishing. I mean, the kid, he loves fishing to death. But it was funny back then for him to just say that, and now the career that he has had and has carved out for himself all began with his dad, and then ultimately through the bed situation, which was beautiful.
That's hilarious.
So post bed.
Well, actually, let's pause right there.
Go ahead.
We're about halfway through the show. We're going to take a quick break and hear from our sponsors, and then we'll come back, and that'll get us caught up to where you are today. So we've heard your past, and now we're about to hear your present and future.
Nice one.
Hearst Ranch is a proud sponsor of the Heritage Radio Network. The Hearst family has been raising cattle on the rich, sustainable native grasslands of California's Central Coast for over 150 years. Piedra Blanca Rancho in San Simeon is the original Hearst Ranch, founded by George Hearst in 1865. George's son was the famous publisher William Randolph Hearst. In addition to being known for building the iconic Hearst Castle, William was, like his father before him, an avid rancher. In his words, I would rather spend a month at the ranch than any place in the world. Thanks to one of the largest land conservation easements in California history, a joint effort with the California Rangeland Trust, the American Land Conservancy, and the state of California, the working landscape at Hearst Ranch will be preserved forever. Learn more about Hearst Ranch at HearstRanch.com.
Burning hunger, you can understand.
And we are back. You're listening to The Speakeasy on Heritage Radio Network. Our guest today is Willie Shine. We're just kind of getting to, man, I always love when we have people on, we get to hear their background. You've got a hell of one.
Yeah, man.
As far as like getting into it.
Thanks, man.
Yeah, so when we left the first half, you were we just started talking about doing the bar 5-day course.
Yeah, we were talking about shark fishing,
and then shark fishing, and then bed, and then bed. I mean, like, how many times was that featured on Sex and the City?
Jesus,
like,
were you ever in the background shots?
Well, that was, to be honest, that was like inspiration for the show. It wasn't even really built yet in New York. It was the original one was in Miami Beach, and it was supposed to be built and ready for that show back then, but it just wasn't in time. So when they did it on the show, it was in like a warehouse that they built up,
kind of
thing. But you know, because the timing just didn't work.
amazing.
But pretty funny. Anyway, you know.
Cool.
Yeah.
So yeah, let's jump back to that spot. You did Bar 5-Day in 2006. How did that change your career? I mean, I feel like I've never done Bar 5-Day because I don't have the money.
I can't take that much time off work.
It's a duality. I don't have the money.
Yeah, it's tough.
And then you lose a week's worth of work.
Yeah.
But I totally see it and value it and understand it and know that that's a fucking golden ticket, man. You go to Bar 5-Day and pass and do well, that's your fucking, you're in.
I mean, it's a golden ticket, but it's, you know, it's really about the individual.
Oh, of course. Everything is, but...
And it's intense.
But I don't think any individual's going to that who doesn't have that mentality. So if you fucking go, you've already kind of got that mentality, but then you get the ticket.
Right, right.
And even if you don't, the camaraderie that comes out of that. The people that I hear say that they went through Bar 5-Day, they view their classmates as like fucking battery mates for life. Like, right?
Yeah. I mean, I got very lucky, right? So like I said previously, right place, right time, right situation, right people. I just, you know, it just so happened that in 2006, when that came to fruition with the Bar 5-Day Partners, I had already happened to be working with Steve Olson and Andy Seymour, doing events around the country and different things like that. And once this popped, it was, okay, Andy Seymour, Willie Shine, Leo DeGroff, a couple others, we're going to run the back of the house. We are going to, you know, kick this thing off, the inaugural. And, you know, the first one, like anything, was crazy. It was in a venue on, like, 29th or 30th Street in Manhattan between, like, 7 and 8. It was an old nightclub that had three or four floors, and we brought... So Bar 5-Day, you bring everything in,
yeah,
produce it, break everything down, send it back, right? So it's 5 or 6 days of a production, you know? And we do everything. We bring it in. You run it and then break it down and send it out. So the first one was crazy. Super proud to have been a part of it. And from that day to this year, it has grown exponentially. Every year we get better. But like you said, it's intense, but it's an opportunity for the bartender that really wants to further their career and learn as much as they can. I mean, I kind of describe it like, if you're going to go to become a master of wine or a master sommelier or something like that, the only thing that's close to that in the cocktail world, in the bar world, would be Bar 5-Day.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right?
Agreed.
So it's intense, but, you know, it takes the right individual that wants to further their career and learn these things, because you taste over 300 spirits blind throughout the week. And you got all these cats, you know, like Dale and Dave and Andy and now we got Sean Kenyon and Leo and myself, and you know, now we have a bigger faculty as of this year, that Julie Reiner and
Misty Kalkofen was involved.
Misty Kalkofen's involved.
Like, yeah.
There's so many people now that are like part of the faculty and teaching and a part of it, and that are woven into this like incredible texture and color, and you know, it's a wonderful thing to be a part of, as well as it's an incredible opportunity for an individual to learn. And be in the room with like-minded individuals. So it's pretty fantastic. And this was number 15 this year, actually.
All right, I'm going to start saving my pennies. Me and you are going next year.
Okay.
He's like, okay, fine.
I'll do that.
Before we keep going too far, you brought us a bottle of something to drink. You want to talk about it?
Yeah,
I'm going to crack it open.
So days I'm the Brandmeister of Jägermeister. Brandmeister is, I guess you could define it as brand expert, conduit to the bartender. I sit on the marketing team. I do a lot of global a global work as well, helping with global cocktail strategy, that kind of thing, U.S. cocktail strategy, everything education, you know, to one of your favorites.
It is one of my favorites.
Which is Jägermeister, but also just the bitter herbal world, you know?
People try and call me out all the time for being one of my favorites, and I'm like, listen, man, you've been drinking it wrong.
Yeah, no, that's exactly right.
Dave, I poured you one too, by the way.
So what I brought here today is called a Jägermeister Manifest.
Yeah.
Jägermeister Manifest.
I haven't tried it yet. I'm excited.
Is coming out this year. It's already launched in Germany and the UK. It's coming here in around May, June into this country. Very limited allocation. It's very hard to make. So it's always going to be, you know, something that we'll never have a lot of volume of. But it's beautiful, and I'm proud to be, you know, say that I was a little bit of a part of the process, and you know, it's got Jägermeister at its core, right? It's got the family and heritage at its core, but we've done a few things to it in its process to change it a little bit, and that being a little bit of less. There's less caramel, less sugar, higher ABV, but then also there's a fifth macerate added.
Ooh.
That's double, you know, two times the herbal load into that macerate, as well as we've blended in a northern wheat distillate from Germany called Korn. So there's a wheat distillate in Germany called Korn. It's kind of weird. Korn, the band, K-O-R-N.
That's not confusing at all. A wheat distillate called Korn.
Called Korn, yeah. And what we did with that distillate is we age it in unique barrels that we make ourselves with American wood and German wood with a medium char for 15 months.
Regular size barrel?
Regular size barrel.
Not the legendary Jägermeister Mighty Oak casks.
No, not the Mighty Oak cask, but we still rest it in the Mighty Oak cask for Jägermeister in order for the botanicals to kind of come together. But
you ever seen those things, Damon?
Mighty.
Yeah.
Mighty.
It's on its side, and when you stand in front of the round part of the top, you know, basically what would be the top of a barrel, it's, what is it, 18, 20 feet tall?
Yeah, double your, some of them are double, you know, some are 18, 20
They're
feet.
Massive.
Yep.
So like, this
we're
going to
build a real barrel.
It's like a subway tunnel.
Yeah, basically, yeah. It's bigger than this studio for sure.
Yeah.
Anyhow, okay, so we're giving it some nose. What do we got here?
So it's Jägermeister at its core. We've added in all those things that I've said. It's the process takes a while to do, and it's a beautiful thing. So what you're going to get here, you see the color. It's not as you guys know. I mean, there's not a lot of caramel here. And in this category, you know, the listeners out there, you know, in the herbal bitter category, caramel isn't a dirty word. Caramel is an ingredient.
Yep.
It adds that. If you've had a creme brulee before, right? That burnt sugar kind of flavor profile with a little bit of bitterness, right? That's what caramel does. So at the end of the day, there's a little less caramel in there, a little less sugar here, but it's still liquor.
It also changes the density of the spirit.
Yep.
Yeah, it does a lot of stuff. I mean, burnt sugar brings sweetness because it's sugar. It brings bitterness because it's burnt, but it also brings viscosity because it's syrup.
And you get different things on the nose when you change the viscosity. So.
And when you burn shit. Let's burn some shit.
Yeah. Go ahead.
So as you can see by the color that you know, it's not super dark. It's like auburn and it's kind of colorish. Yeah,
kind of looks like a
like Montenegro.
Kind of looks like a little diluted. It looks like an old fashioned without ice.
Yeah, that's a good call. What are you getting on the nose there though? It's like
cinnamony,
right? Boom.
Smells like.
I mean, the alcohol is a little higher, right? It's at 38%, so you get a little bit of that.
Yeah, thinner in the nose.
You also get a little bit of the wood notes, right? So it's sitting in, you know, those casks with a medium char, so you're getting a little of that.
This is good. It's toasty. It's warming. I said it looked like an old fashioned. It kind of tastes like an old fashioned, like built in the glass already.
It's, you know, it doesn't have like the heavy like licorice.
No, it's minimal. I don't get a lot of anise on this at all.
Yeah,
like it's minimal. This is delightful.
Cinnamon, cardamom. I would say.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Cool.
Yeah. So that's Manifest. Yeah. It's
nice.
It's back notes of like ginger.
Yeah, for sure.
Oh,
a little spiciness.
This is tasty.
Yeah.
This is like I want to sit around the fire over at Grand Army and drink this.
So how long can we not order it for?
Yeah. Damon and I have to arm wrestle at the end of the show who gets the rest of the bottle. He always wins. And Dave, I poured you one. Did you hear me?
Yeah, I just didn't want to come barging in.
Oh, all right. Well,
I guess I could do that, though.
No one's ever going to stop you from doing that.
We should have a celebratory cheers.
Come get your cheers, guys.
Yeah. Bring it in.
Good to see you, team.
Roast.
This is delicious.
Prost.
Willie Shine. So happy to have you.
Can I get you? Oh, it's cross.
There it is.
There it is. Manifest. So let's talk about Jägermeister and your job with them. You're enjoying it?
Yeah, no, it's an opportunity of a lifetime, man. When I jumped on 2+ years ago, almost 2.5 years ago now.
Gosh, it's been that long already?
Yeah. The Most family came over, bought Sidney Frank. We got rid of all of
which is like such a fucking strong move.
Yeah.
Like they were just like, we're not super happy with your performance and selling us inside this portfolio, so we're just going to buy your whole thing.
It was time.
Yeah, I mean, it's like when you go into a restaurant and you're like, this is not the ham sandwich I expected. I'm going to buy the restaurant and fix this fucking ham sandwich. You know what I mean? It's like, you just like, I got the money. I'm doing this.
So it was, you know, it's a family owned brand since 1934. And in this country, Sidney Frank had it from the late 70s, early 80s distribution rights.
Right.
And it was the time to take a global control of the brand. And the family came, bought Sidney Frank out. And wanted to just take full control of Jägermeister in the U.S. I mean, it's the biggest market in the world for booze.
Of course.
So we wanted to spend some time with the brand and get it healthy and take it to the next level. So super proud to have been brought on the team 2.5 years ago. As Brandmeister.
Yeah. What does that mean? Are you global? Are you just America? What are you?
It's U.S., but I do a lot of global
stuff. Yeah, because I've seen you've been traveling a lot.
Yeah, I do a lot of global stuff. And a lot of it has to do with education of myself.
Yeah.
But then also working, closely with HQ in Germany, talking about global cocktail strategy and innovation.
Trends,
and
whatever.
Trends and, all that kind of stuff. So it's a unique position that's really hard to define, but literally for me, it's, if I was to define it simply, it's brand expert, category expert, anything and everything has to do with Jägermeister as a brand. I'm the guy that knows the most of it within our U.S. world. I'm the conduit to the bartender. Anything that's educational strategy, I do. U.S. drink strategy, I do. And then any innovation or anything, I'm part of the team that does that. I sit on the commercial leadership team. I sit pretty high on the marketing team. A lot of on-premise, bartender stuff. We have a wonderful group of people around this country called trend and scene managers, and they're not really ambassadors. They're in the classic sense of a brand ambassador. They do a lot more.
Yeah.
And I work closely with that team around the country as well, because at the end of the day, it's Jägermeister as we know it, is very much about that celebratory moment, that shot moment, and then. If you want to pour it in a drink, you pour it in a drink. But it's also a lifestyle. It's also a lifestyle brand that we're tapping into subcultures around this country in different markets, tapping into food, fashion, art, music, and just aligning ourselves with rad people and just doing really cool shit.
Yeah, man.
Speaking
of music and cool shit, especially starting out with cool shit, I got to attend. It was right after you started with Jägermeister. We got to go down to Red Hook, and you had the pop-up bar, the Jägermeister pop-up bar in the trailer.
The truck, yeah.
That thing was incredible.
But that used to be a stage.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It was a pop-up stage for
festivals.
For all kinds of festivals.
It was built in 2007, man, as the Jägermeister mobile stage. It saw over 1,000 shows.
It's crazy. And then they turned it into a bar. Yeah. It's amazing.
Yeah, it's like a semi-truck trailer with a beautiful bar built in.
It's beautiful.
And the sides flip down and it turns into a giant stage.
Yeah.
Gorgeous. Crazy.
It's like
a fucking transformer.
Yeah,
it is. Totally Optimus Prime.
Jägermeister built a fucking transformer of red.
When I signed the dotted line, the first thing they said to me is like, you want to...
drive the truck?
You want to build a bar in this truck? So a guy that I work with, this guy, Jack Carson, he's a pretty incredible individual, funny as hell.
I've met Jack. Yeah.
You know Jack. He's got like a pretty incredible pedigree back in the music industry, music business, that kind of thing. And he was running national events at the time. And he, back in 2007, with a crew, built this thing. And then when I jumped on, they were like, okay, work with Jack, build this truck. So we had an absolute blast turning this semi-trailer into a kind of mobile speakeasy kind of thing. Like, I know
it was parked down the middle of nowhere.
Right.
They put us on a bus and wouldn't tell us where we were going.
And the outside of the truck doesn't scream Jägermeister on the outside. It says Wolferison Buddel.
Yeah.
Finest purveyor of herbs, spices, roots, and flowers. And the reason why we chose that is because Wolferison Buddel. Not even get buzzed. Wolferison Buddel is the old name of where Jägermeister is, the town. It's called Wolfenbuddel now, but back in the day it was called Wolferison Buddel. And being finest purveyors of herbs, spices, roots, and flowers, think about it. Jägermeister's got 56 herbs, spices, roots, and flowers from all over the globe. So we're just playing on words, playing on name, that kind of thing. And it's, you know, a great color green with a little bit of tan writing. And it's not flashy black and orange.
Yeah.
And you know, we're going in a different direction. But the bar is amazing. The guys who I had built that bar inside there, if you've ever been to Sweet Liberty in Miami for John LeMayer's bar.
Of course.
The guys who built that bar. And a good friend of mine, Dan Binkowitz, who's John's partner at that bar, gave me the company that built their bar, and they were called off the top of my head, I can't remember it right now, but they helped me build it.
That's awesome.
And it needed to be mobile. It needed to break down, so because when you're driving on the road with it, everything's got to kind of break down and pack away, you know. And
it has running water.
And
I got behind the bar and I was
had it too. Yeah, it has those drawers. It's
we were
there
the same
bar.
Night.
Were we?
Yeah, because
it was three nights in a row. I can't remember.
I think we were there the same night.
Okay.
But the guys who
I'm not going to say that I don't remember because I was drinking, but I don't remember because I was drinking.
The guys who run this truck still to this day are like mad genius production people that still do like massive festivals and shows. Like one of the guys, this guy Dave Summers, is like a sound engineer genius that's worked with everybody like Def Leppard and Slayer and everybody. Awesome. And they run the production on this truck all over the country. It's pretty rad, man. The people that have been put together as a team in the U.S. to take Jägermeister to the next level are just incredible individuals. You know, I'm blessed to be working with some pretty rad cats.
You are. I'll accept your answer that you're blessed. But as we said, maybe on the break, you know, it's one of those situations where the harder you work, the luckier you get. Right?
That's true.
I don't think it's all just luck. Although I think a lot of it is. We agree on that, right? We're a bunch of lucky dudes.
Well, you put yourself in the right situation, hopefully luck will come. And I think through my career that has happened a few times, thank God, just due to, you know, work ethic that was beat into me as a young man.
Yeah.
And then a little bit of passion about something, right? If you really, really love something, like I ended up just loving what I was doing and it didn't feel like work, right? I mean, so that all kind of coming together was a perfect storm of opportunity.
It's great, man.
Yeah.
You know? Well, you know, I got to say again, man, you really inspire me. Like you're saying Souther before at the beginning of the show is every time he walks in the room, you're just like, all right, it's a different kind of party now.
Yeah, yeah. Know? Get your shine on.
Yeah.
It really shines in the room. It's going to get real.
Yeah. But I really appreciate your passion for the industry, and we all do.
Well, and everything that you do for us. Yeah, and everything you do for us, too. You know, you've become, by proxy, you know, you're the brand meister of your brand that you actually work for, but you're sort of an ambassador to this industry. In that, to reiterate what I said earlier, like when you show up, shit gets real, shit changes, attitudes change, the room changes, the atmosphere changes, and that was long before you were in this position. Like that's just who you are. I think it would be the same thing if you were a fucking tire salesman.
Like, yeah, well, you know, I appreciate
the dudes
that
from Goodyear would be like, "Fuck, Willie's here."
Yeah,
and the Firestone guys would be like, "Yeah, rad." It wouldn't matter. It doesn't matter. And I think that's a great personality trait that transcends what we do, and that's just part of you. And that's what makes you a beautiful person, man.
I love the fact that when even now, dude, like hanging out with two OGs in the studio talking shop, and it's great to bring out the best of all of us, man. You know, like it's an opportunity. This is a great opportunity to be just chilling back here, having a bud. Drinking some Manifest, talking to some OGs, man, you know?
Like yeah, sitting in a trailer. Yeah.
It's good, you know? And, just to go back to what you said a little bit is, I'm also a married man with three kids. know, and the balance of the balance of work life and family life and all of it is complete beautiful mayhem, right? It's literally beautiful mayhem, you know. Day to day, balancing both worlds out is not an easy task.
Yeah,
but I wouldn't change it for the world, you know.
It's amazing.
Yeah,
cool, man. Well, it looks like we're at the end of the show, man.
Yeah, it was a great one.
That's
yeah.
it.
We're, yeah.
Quick Love and you guys.
Quick and painful. Yeah. Quick and painful. That's how we do it.
Cool, man. Sunder, you want to take us out?
Yeah, let me actually, let me pull up my calendar real fast. I wasn't really prepared. Next week, well, in upcoming weeks, we've got, you know, Alfred Quantreau is going to be here. He just wrote a book.
Oh, right.
He's going to be on the show. We've got the team from Shaker and Spoon coming up as well. That's a pretty cool thing. They do like, it's almost like a Blue Apron, but for drinks. Mm-hmm. They get a little subscription box that comes once a month. And
they do a great job. We did it.
I did one too. Yeah.
I did a couple months ago. Unbelievable.
Yeah.
Just in really meticulously well put together.
Yeah. Cool. Right. It's pretty cool. You get this whole box and all you have to do is go out and buy one bottle of booze and it'll make 12 drinks from the stuff that's in the box. Pretty rad. We'll talk more about that. Maggie Hoffman's coming up with her book as well. Yeah, we got some bunch of cool stuff coming up.
Great.
Yeah, I'm glad to be back in the studio. Happy New Year.
Hey, man.
Yeah. Glad to be back hanging out with Dave out there. Thanks, Dave, for always being here and taking care of us.
Except for those couple weeks, but yeah, you got it.
Hey, listen, everybody needs a vacation, and I'm sure people who have to work with Damon and I probably extra need a vacation.
Yeah.
you know, we stand on your shoulders to make this thing happen. Anyway, that's all I've got.
All right, cool, man. Well, that's it for the Speakeasy this week. Thank you, Willie Shine, again. Thank you to all of our listeners for listening to Heritage Radio Network. Tune in to the station for many more programs like this. Click on the beating heart at the top right so you can donate to the station and keep us alive. And we'll see you next week. Cheers, y'all.
Cheers, guys.
Cheers, guys. Thanks for having me.
So you don't shun the devil with your rock and roll load. Knows that country music's gonna save your soul. The devil runs his groove in them rhythm and blues. That's him. It's gonna get you some in the end.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at @heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please, join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.